This is Dr. David Mathewson in his teaching on third semester Greek. This is session number 6 on prepositions.
So now we're going to enter the wonderful world of prepositions. And there are a lot of them in the Greek New Testament, and obviously we don't have time to go through each of them individually. We might use one or two as examples. This is where it's helpful to rely on grammars or lexicons that will help us to see the individual prepositions and how they can function, the various meanings they can convey in their context. But what I want to do is talk a little bit more generally about interpreting prepositions and prepositional phrases. A couple of observations to begin with. Basically, what a preposition does, besides confuse us, what a preposition does is it basically it helps the nouns in the sentence and the words in the sentence or clause express their relationship to each other more clearly. And often there's overlap between the basic case functions that we already talked about a couple lectures ago and the prepositions. But often the prepositions add further clarity and specificity as far as how words function and relate to each other within the sentence or within a clause. The other thing to say about the prepositions in Greek that hopefully you are familiar with from a first-year Greek class is that some of the prepositions can occur with more than just one case. So to back up, basically what you'll find in the New Testament is usually never a preposition all by itself. It will be followed by a noun, which is often referred to as the object of the preposition. And this is an example of fixed word order in Greek. As a footnote, as I said before, some people say, Greek doesn't follow word order. That's not quite true. If we look at language as a spectrum from languages that are completely fixed and languages that are completely free with their word order, Greek is certainly towards the free end, but at the same time, there are certain fixed word orders, and this is one of them. Preposition followed by its noun, which is often called the object of the preposition. And the thing is that the noun will occur in a specific case or cases with certain prepositions. And the tricky thing in Greek is that some prepositions can occur with nouns in at least three cases: genitive, dative, and accusative. Usually nominative and vocative, we're not considering that. But the three other cases, genitive, dative, and accusative, prepositions can occur with all three, and that will usually influence the meaning of how you translate the preposition and the meaning of the preposition. And there's all kinds of debate that I don't want to go to. Does the preposition determine the case, or is the case determine how the preposition is used? We don't need to go into that. All you need to know really is that the case of the noun following the preposition will often determine its meaning and how you'll translate it, how it functions in the sentence, what it is indicating. And fortunately, the number of prepositions that occur with three cases is limited. There's not a bunch of them. The bulk of prepositions only occur with one case, like the preposition ek, out of or from, only occurs with nouns in the genitive in Koine Greek. And so you don't have to worry about the dative, you don't have to worry about the accusative case with ek. Whenever you see ek, it's going to be followed by a noun in the genitive case. But there are some prepositions that can occur with nouns in all three cases. For example, the preposition para can occur with a noun in the dative, accusative, or genitive case, I believe. And how that preposition is translated, what it means, is going to be affected by the case of the noun that follows it. And again, this is where we don't have time to go into all the prepositions and how they differ in meaning, but this is where you want to rely on a good grammar. In the grammar that Professor Emig and I wrote, Intermediate Greek Grammar, published by Baker Publishing, we have a chapter that discusses the major meanings of prepositions, and also a good lexicon like BDAG, Bauer, Danker, Arndt, and Gingrich, will help you with understanding the meaning of prepositions given the case that of the noun that follows it. Now, when it comes to interpreting prepositions, and this is known, by the way, this is known as the preposition and the noun together is known as the prepositional phrase. You often hear that. That is just a name given to the preposition and the noun together. And it's kind of best to look at it that way, treat the whole phrase together and in understanding how to interpret it and what to do with it, how to translate it as well. Again, a couple observations on interpreting prepositions or prepositional phrases. First of all, is what I like to say avoid overanalyzing prepositional phrases. Now, prepositional phrases are of utmost importance in exegesis. They help express relationship between words and groups of words within a sentence. So it's imperative to figure them out. They're part of the makeup of the language. They're part of the grammatical structure of the language, and they indicate important relationships. But avoid overanalyzing them. And usually what happens is you frequently find theology read off of prepositional phrases. So that, for example, you'll often find people arguing for a theory of the atonement, the substitutionary atonement, based on a prepositional phrase, or some other theological construct or concept that is somehow present in that prepositional phrase. But we want to avoid that. Again, theological concepts and the theology of the New Testament is not going to be hidden in a prepositional phrase or an article or any other grammatical construction, but will be present in the sentences and the clauses. Yes, prepositional phrases play a role in our theology, but we need to understand what role they play. For example, a certain prepositional construction with the preposition anti or who pair will be important in understanding the atonement. But at best, they will contribute to and allow for it and point to it instead of proving it or themselves bearing all the theological weight of a theory of the atonement. So I'm not suggesting that we ignore them when it comes to our theology or that we sidestep them, but only that we understand the role of grammar. It supports it. It contributes to it. It points to it. Very rarely do the grammatical constructions bear all the theology. Again, it's the larger context. This is part of the context, a prepositional phrase that we have to take into account. And certainly we can't come up with a theological position that contradicts the grammar. But the grammar is simply one important contributor to how we derive theology from the text. And that includes understanding the broader context. It understands how sentences and clauses are put together, what's taught in paragraphs, and not just what we find hidden in grammatical construction. So avoid overanalyzing. Again, please don't read this, avoid prepositional phrases. You need to figure them out. They're important contributors to the grammar and the structure and the relationship of parts of the sentence. But don't overanalyze them and make them bear theological concepts that they're not meant to bear. At best, but importantly, they will support and they will point to and allow for certain theological positions. And again, we can't hold to a theory of the atonement or a theological position that contradicts the grammar or the use of a prepositional phrase. The other thing is realize that with some prepositions, there's probably going to be some overlap in meaning. That is, some prepositions will do this. Very, very unlikely are two prepositions, do they mean exactly the same thing, or probably one of them would drop out. But often they tend to merge where they still may have their individual emphases, but they will still at times overlap in meaning. And again, only the context can tell you that. So for example, a couple of examples of prepositions that may overlap is ek and apa. Both often can mean out of or movement out of. And sometimes, or even, you know, depending on how you translate them, there may be context in which ek and apa are used synonymously. And you probably will not make a big distinction between them. Another one would be ace and en. Sometimes the same thing. They appear to overlap, or they still can have their distinctive meaning at times, but in some contexts, or depending on the author, there may be some overlap in meaning so that you don't always want to stress some big difference between these prepositions. So again, that's just how language works, and just be aware that sometimes some of these prepositions, these are two examples that are widely recognized of prepositions that tend to overlap at times in meaning. A third thing to keep in mind with prepositions is sometimes prepositions seem to have, without committing the root fallacy, that every word has a basic meaning that lies behind everything, is a lot of prepositions do seem to have a local meaning that allows it to extend itself into other areas or other meanings. For example, the preposition ace. The preposition ace, it's kind of its local meaning is entry into something. So we speak of entering into a house, ace oikon, for example. Ace is followed by, is one of those prepositions that only in New Testament Greek is followed by one case, the noun in the accusative. But it's frequently used in its local sense of entry into something. So, ace oikon, he went into the house. You see it prefixed to the verb erkomai, ace erkomai. She entered into or went into the village or the city or the country. So, you'll frequently find ace with the local idea of entry into. However, you'll often find that idea extended more metaphorically and less locally. For example, you'll often find the preposition used to indicate purpose or goal. The idea of entry into can easily indicate the goal or the intention or the purpose of something. So when Paul says something like, from faith, ek pisteos, unto faith, ace piston, from faith to faith. Ace piston does not mean entering physically into faith, but it clearly indicates the idea of goal or intention. And so a lot of prepositions will kind of have a basic meaning, ek, meaning out of or from, that can easily, even ek is sometimes can be used of the idea of means, something is done by it, so that it'll start with a local meaning, a basic meaning that accounts for and extends into other applications. Again, ace meaning entry into, you can kind of see how that would easily lend itself to goal or purpose or intention of an action. So those are three very important principles to keep in mind in interpreting prepositions. Don't overanalyze them. They're important. They indicate important relationships within the sentence, the clause, but don't read theology into them. Don't make them bear all the theological weight of a passage. Recognize that some prepositions may have overlap in meaning, and using different prepositions may not always be stressing different ideas, but only the context can tell you that. And then finally, it may be helpful to see that a lot of preposition kind of begin with a basic local meaning, like ace, into, and extend to more metaphorical or other meanings that are similar, related to that, like purpose, intention, goal, from the idea of entry into in ace. Another feature to think about with prepositions is that prepositional phrases, so again, we're talking about the preposition and the noun that follows it together is the prepositional phrase. What do prepositional phrases do in a sentence? So you'll get tired of seeing this, but I find it helpful to use this kind of symbolic representation. Again, a full-blown sentence or a fairly complete sentence would have a subject, verb, direct object, indirect object, and I'm just using all those just for illustrative purposes. But what does a prepositional phrase do? A prepositional phrase can actually modify any of these elements in a sentence. That is, again, to use this branch or leg that comes off of these elements and to see that this is a container. So maybe you can imagine a bucket, a little bucket in each of these as containers. One of the things that can fill that slot is a prepositional phrase. You'll probably find it most commonly, the prepositional phrase, I'll just use PP, modifying verbs. That's one of the more common functions of them. But you'll often find the prepositional phrase in Greek modifying one of the nouns in the sentence. That happens on occasion as well. For example, if I said, the instructor was sitting on the chair, your prepositional phrase in English is on the chair. Now, what is that modifying? It seems to be modifying sitting, the verb, telling where he's sitting. But what if I said, I saw the book on the table? On the table would be your prepositional phrase. It doesn't seem to be modifying saw, telling where I saw. It seems to be modifying book, telling where the book was, on the table. So there it modifies a noun. And you find the same thing in Greek. Now, an interesting example, when you read, if you were to read Philippians chapter 1 and the first few verses, Paul says, I give thanks to my God upon every mention of you, always in all my prayers, in behalf of all of you, with joy, making requests upon your fellowship or based on your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. And if you read further, there's all kinds of prepositional phrases. Notice all those prepositional phrases. In every mention. In behalf of all of you. Metakaras, with joy. Upon your fellowship, or based on your fellowship, in the gospel, eis ta euangelion. It's just filled with prepositional phrases. And if you read Philippians 1 carefully, it's not always clear what those prepositional phrases modify. Do they modify the verbs in those clauses, or do they modify some of the nouns? And that's one of the things you would need to do if you're doing exegesis of Philippians 1. Not only do you want to figure out the meaning of the prepositional phrases, but you also, the further step is, what do they modify in the context? Are they modifying verbs, or are they modifying nouns? And frankly, sometimes it's difficult to tell, and it may not be that crucial to exegesis to decide that. But that is one of the things that you need to figure out and determine as you're dealing with prepositions or prepositional phrases. The last thing that I want to say about prepositional phrases is what they do to verbs. One of the things that prepositions do, or one of the ways they can function, is by being attached to verbs. A good example is the verb erkumai, I come or I go. It can take a number of prepositions on the, just attach a preposition to the front. Eis erkumai, I enter into. Ex erkumai, I go out of. Di erkumai, I go through, the preposition dia. So prepositions, not only do prepositions form a prepositional phrase, a preposition plus a noun, but prepositions can be prefixed to verbs, put right in the front of a verb. And when that happens, there's at least three things that can take place. First of all, when you have a preposition put in front of a verb, sometimes it can just add its basic meaning. And this would be, an example would be eis erkumai. It just adds the idea of to the verb erkumai, which is I go, I come. It just adds the local meaning of into, I go into. Or ex erkumai, I go out of. So sometimes a preposition just adds its meaning to the verb. Sometimes adding a preposition to a verb may intensify it. It may simply intensify the meaning. So, for example, the verb estheo, I eat. When you add the preposition kata, most agree that gets eat gets intensified to I devour something. And you often find lexicons bringing that out. For example, in later on in the another one is the verb gnosko, I know, gnosko. But when you add the preposition epi to it, epigenosko, some would say that we should translate that I know fully, I know completely, so that gnosko is intensified. So, for example, in 1 Corinthians 13:12, when Paul says, I will know as I am fully known with epigenosko. So, just be aware that sometimes adding a preposition to the beginning of a verb may serve to intensify it. And then finally, I'm running out of room, so I will erase those examples. The last one is, sometimes it appears to change the meaning of the verb altogether. So, for example, the verb gnosko, I know, anagnosko, I read. And there's other examples we could point to. And again, this is where you have to rely on grammars and lexicons. There's no standard rules to tell you when this happens, but rely on the better grammars, rely on BDAG and the better lexicons to help you understand and what is going on when a preposition gets tacked on the beginning of a verb. Does it simply add its local meaning? I go into ais erchomai. Does it intensify the meaning of the verb, or does it maybe change the meaning altogether? That can only be determined by looking at and utilizing tools such as BDAG and the better grammars to help sort those kind of things out. So prepositions, prepositional phrases are important for the information they convey, but don't overinterpret them, don't overanalyze them, but pay close attention to them. They are important parts of the context of the grammatical construction of the text of the Greek New Testament.
This is Dr. David Mathewson in his teaching on third semester Greek. This is session number 6 on prepositions.